This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week we're going to go in a little bit different direction from where we have gone in the past, and that is traditionally we will speak with one person. Occasionally we have two or three or more, but that is kind of a rare exception, unless of course we're doing a convention report, which we did recently, of course, from the 4F convention. There was a virtual convention here a couple of episodes ago. But here for this episode number 611, we're going to be talking with two different individuals and have two separate conversations. And also, I thought it would be interesting to go into an area that interests probably every magician in the world at some point or another, that is with playing cards. We're not all necessarily cardistry type of people or sleight of hand people, or we may not even use playing cards as part of our magic performances. However, we all have at least been familiar with them, perhaps gotten involved with magic to begin with playing cards. At some point in a magician's life, they certainly have learned a few card tricks. So I thought, of course, since this is the basics of our art, or perhaps maybe the gateway to the larger performing art of magic, it's something important to us, and I'd like to learn more about cards. Specifically, how are they printed when we have these new designs that are coming out all the time, and also about collectors, that is, those who like, for whatever reason, to buy multiple decks of playing cards for collecting purposes, not necessarily for performance purposes. So this week we have two different guests. One is an artist, actually, and not a magician, but he is someone who has developed, designed, and printed a deck of playing cards, or several decks of playing cards, has had a successful Kickstarter campaign a few years ago, and has a new Kickstarter campaign going on currently as this episode is being broadcast. So I am not trying necessarily to promote or give free advertising to someone for their commercial endeavors, but this is something I think is quite different and quite, I think, of interest to magicians. And that is, again, a Kickstarter campaign that's going out on Kickstarter.com. And if you do a search for Sensu, that's S-E-N-S-U, you will find this deck of cards. And again, our guest we have today is actually from England, who resides in Japan and has for quite some time, and is a writer and a designer. And he's going to talk about all of that, because I just, again, found that interesting. I'd like to know more about how people go about designing cards and contacting the printing company, and from the basics all the way through marketing. So he's going to talk about that. And our second guest from the Kansas City area, Mr. Sean Rivera, is a noted collector of playing cards, and he has a pretty sizable collection. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to let him talk about that. But the reason I wanted to bring in Sean to this episode is because I wanted to get the perspective of someone who actually is a committed card collector, or perhaps he should be committed, but he is dedicated certainly to collecting cards. And I just want to find out, what is it about playing cards that has such an appeal that makes people want to go out and actually collect these things? I mean, magicians in general, we are all collectors of things, and probably many of us, myself included, do have a lot of decks of playing cards. But as far as collecting, why do you? So Sean will talk about that then too. So we're going to begin with the gentleman who is the artist, Jack Brutus Penny, and then we will conclude with Sean Rivera. So you're in for a real treat here this week, and some education as well. I know I certainly was. So please welcome my guests this week, Jack Brutus Penny and Sean Rivera, here on The Magic Word. Well, right now I have with me a guest who's all the way actually in Japan, just outside of Tokyo, and he's going to be talking a little bit about playing cards. I should say more than just a little bit, because there's a lot to say about playing cards and how they are made. And I've always been interested and had a fascination about the interest in these specialty decks of cards, not just the kinds that come off the line from Bicycle or anything else, but the specialty kind. And so today we've got someone who has actually done this in the past, and he has designed a new deck, and I want to talk a little bit about that. So please welcome my friend, Mr. Jack Brutus Penny. Hi there, Jack. How are you?
Hello. Yes, I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for having me here, Scott.
Oh, glad to have you. Yeah, as I said, I'm interested to know about just kind of the process on that. My first question is, what is the appeal of these specialty decks that people want to collect these things? I mean, I see Theory 11 and others who are releasing these, plus like with you having a Kickstarter that may be an individual kind of a thing. What is the fascination of that?
Yeah, well, speaking as a creator, not as a collector, for me, the fascination is just a different medium to put your designs, your artwork on. So it's a new kind of creative canvas. To you know, display your own narratives. But as a collector, I think they are gorgeous pieces, both for display and for use.
Well, that was what I was going to ask about use. It seems like most people, I think, who are collectors might want to maybe even display a sheet, or they might just take out one or two cards, the Joker and the Ace or a King or something, and display those kinds of things. But I would think a lot of times people may not want to use them because, number one, they're more expensive than just buying a regular deck of cards. And also, oftentimes they will have a story with it, I guess. You almost need to tell your volunteer, let me explain what these cards are, because I've got some decks of cards in which they're all black. In other words, the hearts and the diamonds are black instead of red. And particularly in low light, it may not be the preferable deck to use. So address that a little bit.
No, absolutely. So I think in the industry, there are a few different kind of categories of cards. So there are cards for Magic that I'm sure you're very familiar with. There are cards for cardistry, which is more about the handling of them. And then there are collector cards, which is more what I work in as an art focused medium. And so, as you say, collector cards aren't necessarily for handling, though many collectors would still want them to be traditional to some extent. But many collectors, in my knowledge, actually buy two decks of each card, and one they will never open. And often collector cards are numbered and sealed so that they're more valuable before being opened. So it's much like art that you kind of invest in it and keep it, hopefully forever for your collection, but some people for resale or however else they'll be using them.
Now, when you design these also, are you contacted by a card manufacturer saying, can you design something for us, or do you just do them independent?
I think some designers do have direct collaborations with different organizations, whether it's the manufacturer or some other kind of group. But for me personally, I start from the concept, I create it, and then I contract the publisher to print them.
Right. And because I'm thinking, for an example, with Theory 11, where they've got out recently the 007 cards and the Avengers deck of cards, and they've put out different things like that, and you can buy a deck or a brick or whatever you want, but they're a limited edition. Once they're gone, certainly. Do you know if they design them themselves, or do they have a staff, or do they contract with people like you to design something for them?
Oh, no. So, I mean, it depends on the studio. So I'm independent. So I like create and design myself. Theory 11 and a few other studios, they have staff. So, I mean, they design in-house, but I don't know exactly who is responsible for what and how much they work together on them. But it's my understanding that most of them have one or two key designers.
When you're trying to find the printer, how do you go about finding the right person or right company, I guess, that has the right quality of stock? I assume that you have something in mind, that you have a quality that must meet your specifications.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, there aren't that many big quality printers. And so when we're talking about collector cards, people really go for because they come with a price tag, they're going for quality production as well.
Mm-hmm.
So most people go for USB-CC, being both because of its quality, but also because of its name.
That's United States playing card company, by the way. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, United States playing card company. Yeah. For me, because I am more on the artistic side, as I said before, so it's more pushing the creative capacity of using playing cards as a medium. And USPCC is more traditional, so they'll make the kind of casino decks that you typically have. So I tend towards two other companies, but I've been using EPCC, which is Expert Playing Cards Company.
Mm-hmm.
And Legends is also another. So there are a handful of reputable other manufacturers, but USPCC tends to be the one that most creators really go for.
Okay. I know they're cut differently. The way cards, some are kind of cut down and some are up cut a different way as far as how they pharaoh and how they feel. Is that something also that's part of what you're looking for to make sure that it has a good feel for those who do want to actually use the cards rather than just display them?
I'm sure it goes into that, but I think, as I say, if you're designing for cardistry, then the handling is your priority. If you're designing for collectible cards, so art cards, then maybe, so for instance, my focus is more about the accuracy of their printing. So
and the registration, the colors, the way they all fit together, everything.
Exactly, mm-hmm. The registration. So you're not only, for me, I'm printing, say, three different layers. And if the registration is off at all, then it can really affect how it's produced. So that's the initial ink, the vegetable ink layer, and whether it's a metallic ink on top of that, and then whether there's foiling on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So registration is key to get your art concept looking exactly how you planned it.
How did you actually get into this? Were you a designer to begin with? Happened to like art or something about cards? Were you, are you a magician then or what?
No, I'm not a magician, though I enjoy watching it, of course. But no, I have been an artist. I'm actually a nonsense writer and illustrator. So I've got a few published books, and I expanded into different mediums. So, for instance, a collaboration with a Japanese potter, and we make clay pots, Japanese white clay pots together. And but going into playing cards maybe about 4 or 5 years ago was quite a natural and smooth step for me, because I mean, I have quite a few decks at home. I always played cards for me casually, but mm-hmm. growing up playing kings with my grandmother and betting like pennies as we play, or waking up early with my mum and playing over a cup of tea or something. So cards are quite a personal thing for me. It's not in terms of an industry, but it's more of a personal connection.
Right. So you're really not a collector yourself of cards. So much as it is.
I'm not a collector, cardist, or magician. I'm a lover of playing cards.
Okay. All right.
Now, literally playing with cards, yeah.
The deck you are currently working on and going to be releasing, you've been working on for about a year and a half, is that right?
Yes, I think most designers and most, you know, good collectible card designers maybe work for 3 or 4 months on a design concept, and they can usually produce maybe 3 decks a year or something. But for me, it's like a year and a half process. So I produce maybe a deck every 2 years. And so I did one in 2019, and my second will be coming out very soon.
And the one that came out in 2019, how many card decks did you run?
So for the main card themselves, it's limited to only 1,000, which is not the smallest print run, but it's a very small print run.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe most independents will print about 2,500 is a kind of standard limited print run. Some of the designers that you were naming before, like Theory 11, usually they have different editions. So they'll have like a limited print run edition, which is maybe 1,000 or 2,500. And then they'll have a standard, which is unlimited. So they can reprint, rerun, and keep selling.
But when yours is done, it's done. Do they break it's the mold, done. Basically? Or okay.
Well, I never get the mold, but yeah.
Okay. I thought it was interesting. The one that you are currently going to be releasing is going to be environmental friendly, or is that something that you had on your last one also?
So this is a personal thing, but that's through all my work. So the last one, which I have here, which was Culturae Animalis. So this is, yeah, it's printed on recycled and recyclable paper, sustainably sourced paper with soy ink. When I package with a special kind of wrap, which is locally sourced in Japan, made from a sugar cane.
Hmm.
So like everything down to the sticker seal, which is washi paper. So that's obviously recyclable paper, and even recycled masking tape. So I care a lot, and I put that through all elements of the design. And maybe also you know, you're familiar that my works are dedicated to animal welfare.
Yes. Yeah. I wanted you to talk a bit about that. I was going to get into that too, but yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Nope. Pick it up.
So lots of my stories and designs are all inspired by animals. So for instance, my stories are like anthropomorphic kind of animals, like how, if you're familiar with Rudyard Kipling's Just So stories, how did the elephant get its long trunk? It's that kind of whimsical nonsense. And that goes through all of my design as well. So I get a lot of inspiration from animals and wildlife. And as such, I use all of my projects to give back. So this playing card project of Culturae Animalis, so that's the 2019 project. What we did with this was, we used some of the funding to support critically endangered mountain gorillas, to help replant trees in Tanzania and work with their wild habitats. And a portion of all of my sales goes to help rescue and rehome abandoned and displaced cats and dogs and other animals around Japan, where I live.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all themed. So this deck, for instance, are all themed around animals. So one suit are all birds and one suit are all cats and something like that.
So that those designs are on the faces. Obviously, the backs are all going to be the same.
The backs are all. Yeah. So for this, the backs are all. The backs are all standard, but mm-hmm. they're very detailed.
Full bleed also, as opposed to having a border.
Full bleed. And the new deck coming out is also full bleed and very colorful. So whereas this deck was monochrome in that you had the red suits and you had the black suits, which is a more standard coloring system. So this is just because the new deck is about to be crowdfunded. So I don't have any printed decks yet. So this is just during the process of me printing my own at home to test that the artwork comes together as intended. So this is just printed on normal paper, but it's a very colorful, very busy
design
image.
Yeah. Is it the same one way as it is the other? I mean, that's another thing, of course, for magicians could use a one-way deck of having the back design that's off a little bit. But are those the same upside down as right side up?
Absolutely, absolutely. So in my first deck, I was focused on the art of it. So it actually was a secret one-way design on the back.
Mm-hmm.
So in that, when you look at it, you can't tell that it's one way easily, but in each corner, there are animals hidden. And so when you know that they're there, you realize that it is one way. This new deck will be two way, partly to suit the design and my vision for it, but also partly because I listened to a lot of the feedback from the first deck and people saying, I would love this. But
okay, and I assume this is going to be another run of just 1,000, or are you going to be having more for this next run?
No, so any deck is a max of 1,000. This new deck will come in two versions, which are distinct. So they're not just a simple color change. There is a clear story driven reason to have two versions, but each one has only 1,000 decks printed,
mm-hmm.
and. As a stretch goal, if you're familiar with crowdfunding, how stretch goals work.
Yes, but go ahead, explain. for those who don't.
Okay. So for those who don't, for crowdfunding, you have a main goal. And so people basically pre-order your product. And if you reach the funding to hit that goal, then you have enough to produce the product, and then you ship it out to all of your backers. But that goal is to pay for the production of your piece. But as a stretch goal, so I can say if we actually hit further, so if we get more backing and more of these pre-orders or support, then we can produce something even more. So it's like an additional expansion on the project. And so as a stretch goal, I intend to print 50, like one special run of 50 of a kind.
Wow. Okay. For those people who are paying extra?
Very limited. And because of that, actually, production costs are incredibly high. Mm-hmm. Because you have to make the whole printing plate only, which is a major cost, then only divide that between 50 right. items going to be printed with it. Yeah.
Right. Wow. So I would imagine that would be more expensive type of a stretch goal on that. The deck itself, going back for just a moment as to what it is, you are living in Japan. You said you've been there for what, about how many years? 13 years?
Yeah, about 13, 14 years 14 now. Years. Yeah.
And so you've been influenced by some of the culture there, and some of it is origami. And that's just what this deck is based on. Can you talk a little bit about that? And what does that mean?
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. So the first deck, so Cultura Animalis, had four suits, obviously, but each suit was themed after a different animal and a different culture. So okay. One of the cultures was East Asia and in particular Japan. One of the cultures was medieval to Renaissance Europe, but in particular England, so where I'm from. And there was also Arabic, Islamic cultures and Aboriginal, so world Aboriginal cultures. So that's from Native American Indians to Australian Aborigines. So taking inspirations from different cultures. In the new deck, it's entirely inspired by Japan. So it's not directly based on origami, though there are elements of that, but inspired by very different arts. So Japanese ukiyo-e, which is wood block prints. So for instance, the famous image of the wave, the great wave of Kanagawa, I believe it is, that is quite famous, I think. And that's ukiyo-e, so that's a wood block print. And also by Hanafuda, which is one of the the traditional first Japanese style playing cards. So you may have seen them, or people could check Wikipedia after Hanafuda. So they're basically picture cards, and they have a lot of games about them, but they don't have any indices or any markings on them. And you have to remember and how they relate to each other and what stories they tell between them.
Wow. So it sounds like this deck would be something, if you do have the whole thing, that all the cards should be displayed as opposed to just a couple of them, because, as you say, they all kind of tell a story. Do you sell sheets of the cards as well?
So, yes. Yeah, so, as you say, so a lot of the designers sell uncut sheets.
Yeah.
So that's just during the print run where they make the cards. Before they cut them, they just take the sheet out and leave it uncut. So you still see the die lines and everything, but you can see the whole sheet on the high quality card paper and everything. And then when you display it, you can frame it, and you can either display it, front side, so you see the faces of the cards, or back, so that you see the backs. Mm-hmm. For most people, when they display an uncut sheet, they usually display the back, which is usually the area where it's the iconic design of this deck. Mm-hmm. Whereas the front, at least the pip cards, usually are fairly standard.
In this case,
every single card is completely hand-drawn, full bleed, and every single card has design. So, yeah, so in the first deck, I sold uncut sheets, limited edition again, so only 30 made. And you can display them, and you can choose, but I would recommend displaying them face forward so that you can see the story and, how all of the cards relate to each other across the scene, yeah.
Wow. What is the process in going through from start to finish? I know you said typically it may be 3 or 4 months and from design to the completion of the printing. In most cases, in yours, it's taken a year and a half. Is there something that took more time because of the attention to detail or other work you were doing, or why did it take so long?
Yes, like I can't speak for the production and design process of other designers sure. directly. But for me, because I don't have any single standard card, so I don't take any standard pips. Every single card is completely hand drawn and conceptualized from the beginning. So I'm not designing, say, a Jack Queen King, a port run for cards, which is what most designers are doing. They're making a beautifully designed deck of collectible cards. What I'm doing is I'm creating a concept, a narrative, and illustrating 52 pieces of art, which would blend and marriage well with a deck of playing cards.
Right.
So that's why it takes a bit longer.
What is your ultimate goal then? Are you wanting or hoping as an artist that you would have these displayed in a museum someplace or for collectors to display? It can't be money. I mean, I know there's a lot of money in selling these, but it's also taking a lot of time. And as far as if you break it down, as far as how much you'd be getting per hour for the money you'd be getting back, it would not be worth your time. I mean, as an artist. So what's your goal with this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, again, so most designers, including myself, do want to be able to live off their creations.
Sure.
but I mean, I do have different motivations. So with the first deck, so let's say it's a 2-year process, if we include the design, the production, to the Kickstarter campaign, to then the fulfillment of that and continuing the sales after that. So. In total, it's been about a 2-year process, and I broke even maybe 2 months ago.
Okay.
So I think from maybe 2 years of solid work, and that's not like part-time, that's Monday to Friday solid work.
This is your full-time job.
So I have a couple of jobs, but this is my full-time job. But weekends, I'm a teacher.
Okay.
And do other things. But full-time weekdays, I'm a designer and writer, illustrator and writer. And this is my full-time job. And after 2 years, I made about $300.
Wow. Okay.
And but for me, that's also because a lot of it does do the charitable work and my other motivations.
Sure, of course.
But absolutely. With the new project, I certainly hope to be able to, you know, support my family a little bit more with it.
Well, there are many types of crowdfunding programs or campaigns, and why did you choose, and which one are you using?
Kickstarter.
You're using Kickstarter. Why are you using Kickstarter versus others?
Versus Indiegogo.
Exactly.
I mean, to be honest, there's not too much of a deep reason behind it. Lots of these card campaigns are done on Kickstarter, which means lots of the collectors and also the further reaching crowd already have Kickstarter accounts, so they're already familiar with the system. So
that makes sense.
It's more likely to succeed if you're on that forum. But also, Kickstarter is now further into Japan as well. They're still fairly new here, but Japan has its own crowdfunding site, so Indiegogo and stuff aren't so common here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was the best of both worlds for me.
So this campaign will begin and end when?
So it begins in a week from today on the 1st of May is launch Japan time, and it lasts for 1 month, so it will end at the end of May. Yeah.
Okay, so for the month of May. Yeah, we're recording this now on April the 20th, so it'll run for the month of May. And where can they find that, and how would I mean, what do you type in as far as doing a search or trying to locate this?
So if I can just explain a little bit of the concept behind the new deck, so maybe you can see what the narrative is. So in order to search it, you need to search Sensu, S-E-N-S-U, Sensu. That's the name of the deck.
Okay.
And Sensu in Japanese means the Japanese folding fan. Mm-hmm. So the kind of fan that, that yeah. closes and opens, yeah.
Okay.
And so that is the main inspiration for the concept behind the cards. So that's why that's the name, obviously. So Sensu. the idea is that in the first deck, Culturae Animalis, which you can also still find, obviously the Kickstarter is now closed 2 years ago, but you can still find it to explore the page and just see
what they look like.
Story yeah. behind it, yeah. Mm-hmm. The court cards in Culturae Animalis had Jack, Queen, King as a triptych. So if you lined them up horizontally, you could see the court scene. So literally, this is within the palace court in the Renaissance Europe or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas the new deck, I've taken that further. So the concept is that one card. So as I said, this is just printed on paper at home to test the art. But one card, the pip and indices have been
tilted a bit,
slightly put at an angle, and mm-hmm. so it creates an elongated canvas, which makes it look a bit more like a tarot deck. Mm-hmm. But what it means is around the border, there's now space where I create an art which at face value looks like it's abstract.
Yes.
But actually, when you fan the cards out into a perfect fan of the run, it creates that canvas,
the backdrop or behind the cards, yeah,
behind the border that's created, then connects all the way across.
Holy moly, that's beautiful.
And then that becomes, so for instance, all of the hearts become spring, Japan in spring.
Oh my
gosh.
Wow.
There's a scene of cherry blossoms and everything. Then all of the clubs become summer, and then it's the sea and a big wave and stuff. So there's hidden art among the cards. And so the idea is one card is a closed fan, and then when they're open together, they become the open fan, the scene. So that's why they're called Sensu.
That makes perfect sense now. Yeah. Very interesting. Wow. And they are beautiful then as well. So again, going to Kickstarter, I think it's kickstarter.com, and then doing a search for S-E-N-S-U.
Exactly. Or if you can't find it, also you can probably search creator. So that's Jack Brutus Penny. Yeah.
Jack Brutus Penny. Yes. One other thing, when you were talking about the one you had done a couple of years ago, I'm unclear on what I was hearing then. Could you spell what that is, what the cards were?
Sure. So they're called Culturae Animalis. So it's a little bit hard because it's in Latin.
Okay. Yeah.
The reason I chose Latin for this this deck name is because they're inspired by many different historical cultures.
Right.
So I didn't want to select, English. I didn't want to select one language to define them. Mm-hmm. So I selected Latin as a sort of root language.
Oh, that makes sense. Certainly. Yeah. That'd be international,
so
that
culturae
way.
Culturae Animalis, meaning like cultural animal or the animal culture.
Okay. Cultura animalis.
Okay. So that's C-U-L-T-U-R-A-E and A-N-I-M-A-L-I-S.
Thank you. For those who might be looking for that, because
sure.
I was unclear what you were saying exactly, and now I understand being in Latin, and I understand why, because of the different cultures that were involved in that. A lot of thinking and everything went behind this. Well, this is great, Jack. Thanks very much for sharing that, and I wish you a lot of luck. And in the past, on that particular deck, on the Culturae Animalis, is that something that reached or achieved your goal and went beyond the stretch goals as well? Back then?
Yes. Again, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to both talk to you about the industry a little bit and about what I do. But yeah, Culturae Animalis reached 210% of its goal. So
wow.
Something like that.
That's good. Mm-hmm.
And it received some crowdfunding awards, partly due to how the process was run. Because when I run a campaign, it's a journey. So I interact with everyone, but I also... Like, for instance, in Culturae Animalis, we created an additional gaff card together. Mm-hmm. So through the campaign, one of the achievements we did was also help sea populations around the UK, especially wild lobster populations. Mm. And so then we decided together as a community to design a new gaff card based around the traditional European Joker card, but tarot Joker kind of card, but changing it to a lobster.
Wow.
So we developed some of the concept together as well.
And I would think that the shipping, I know foreign shipping is expensive, and getting things out of Japan, once you have completed all this and all the cars have been printed, shipping is going to be rather expensive, I think, would try to get that to the US or the UK or wherever from Japan.
Yeah, so a lot of companies in the US can fulfill themselves or go through a different fulfillment organization. Mm-hmm. But for most people producing overseas, they for fulfillment in the US, they do use certain fulfillment companies,
such as
Gambler's Warehouse or some others that help, like they collect them and then they ship them out. I'm considering that, but probably I won't do that for so many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, yeah, shipping from me is always an issue. But because I hand wrap everything, because everything is using environmentally sustainable materials, which other organizations can't quite meet my standards.
Mm-hmm.
But also because I create a lot of very limited work as well. So for instance, in the upcoming campaign, there's a card cut.
Okay.
So what that means is where the whole deck has all 52 cards have been cut through to create a three-dimensional.
Oh, I do see that. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So this was done by another artist that I worked together with, but this is a one-of-a-kind piece.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these have to be carefully managed and put together by myself. So it's hard to trust another organization to be able to handle all of that.
Right, and particularly to ship that out, because if you ship that to someone else and then they ship it on, they'll be responsible for that if it arrives damaged rather than
it you. Becomes a lot more complicated, yeah. So if I ship direct to customers, then I try my hardest. There are usually no issues, but if there are, usually with the postal system, then, you know, I can work with them and I can help the customers. Whereas if there are middlemen, then it gets more complicated.
All right. Well, listen, that sounds fantastic. And everything that you're doing with these cards and going to a lot of nonprofit organizations and wildlife and everything that you're doing is just hitting on every cylinder here of everyone's interest. So I wish you good luck with this and this project. Thanks for being on this. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and I'm always curious to know what it is that's a philosophy. What do people live by? What is important to you?
My personal philosophy.
Yeah.
My personal philosophy in life is about balance.
Okay.
So like I spend, say, Monday to Friday working on this, but whether it's profitable or not is not my goal, but to put the art out there. But then I stop at 4 o'clock and I go and pick up my son from nursery and I give him his bath and I feed him dinner and stuff. Like balancing your life, I think, in every aspect is important to me. As far as my work goes, then a key word for me is nonsense. Which is, you know, whimsy and a narrative that you can lose yourself in.
Yeah, I like that. That sounds great. Jack, thanks very much. I appreciate that. You're sharing your time with us and also your story, and I think I've learned a lot. Hopefully the rest of the listeners have that as well. So until next time, that was Jack Brutus Penny, and this is Scotty out. Now I have with me a magician who is from Kansas City, Kansas, and he is a card collector, and by that I mean playing card collector, not necessarily business cards. That's a whole different kind of collecting, but he is a collector and someone I'd like to kind of talk to about collecting playing cards. Please welcome Sean Rivera. Hi there, Sean.
Hey, how's it going?
Fantastic.
Thanks for having me here.
I'm glad that you are here, and I understand that you are quite the collector of playing cards.
Yes, I do like decks of cards, that's for sure.
Did you ever have an affinity for collecting other kinds of magic memorabilia, and then you kind of eventually got into playing cards, or how did you migrate into that?
Yeah, so I do collect different things here and there, like, you know, some posters, some ephemera, things like that. But as far as decks of cards, I would say, as far back as like when I was about 15 years old,
mm-hmm.
I started collecting decks. I got into Magic when I was about 10, but when I turned 15, I started getting serious about sleight of hand with card magic and things like that. And I'm actually from the St. Louis area, and so I would always hang out with at Gibbles Magic Shop down there on the Landing.
Okay.
And there was a magician behind the counter named Bob Cole. And one day we were just, you know, talking about the different decks of cards in the case, you know, like the cheek to cheek decks, the stripper decks, the Svengali decks. Mm-hmm. And out of the blue, he asked me, he was like, "So how many decks of cards do you own?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know, maybe like 8 or 10. And he goes, "Well, you're a piker."
Yeah, you're a real beginner.
And, and at the time, I had no idea what piker meant, but I understood that I needed more decks of cards. So I think it started from there. I just started gobbling them up.
Especially since he was a dealer, you need to buy them from him. It's got to...
Of course,
you come back and buy more cards from me. Certainly.
Right.
As for me, all the cards I collect, I use. And so I keep a big fishbowl full of them, and I reach in and just pull them out, and I buy them by the brick and put them here. But those are for use. But I keep acquiring these cards that are unique, meaning they are made by certain magicians, have their names or pictures or logo or something on that. And then there are these other new decks. I mean, I just recently had one of my patrons who had sent me a 007 deck, which I think is really cool, which is another collection thing I have, another fanaticism I have towards James Bond, which is why I named my son Sean, not spelled the same way as yours, but after Sean Connery. Whole different story, but
nice.
I was always interested in Bond. But and also, I started collecting, but not intentionally. There's a difference in collecting and accumulating. I'm really more an accumulator of cards. I've got them, but I'm not trying to find a particular kind of card. Is that something that when you collect cards, are you looking just cards generally, or do you have a brand that you go for, or something that's just new that's coming out on Kickstarter or something, or what's your direction of collecting?
Yeah, so for me, generally it isn't just, you know, anything that just comes out. It has to be something that strikes my interest or catches my eye. Like, for example, if it's a deck of cards that's marked on the back, or if it has a one-way back design or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a Bruce Lee deck. I'm big into Bruce Lee and martial arts.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, you know, things like that. Yeah, it has to catch my eye.
So there are things, really, you do have like you said, an affinity for something that really attracts you. It's not necessarily whatever bicycle is coming out with, or like you said, GAF decks or something. Do you have a set of GAF decks in different manufacturers?
I do have a lot of GAF decks, yes. There's there are some decks that I put together myself that mm-hmm. are GAF'd, like here on this shelf here. These are all gimmick decks. Some of these are gaffed. Some of these are, you know, trick decks that I put together.
Yeah, as we're looking like behind you're showing me this line of cards that looks like it's on a ledge, and then you got a whole bookcase full of cards. Looks like that was specially designed, made for cards, because it's just the right height.
It wasn't, but yeah, it just happened to fit perfectly.
Was it for like cassette tapes or something originally?
Yeah, I think it was for something like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. How many do you think you have? I'm sure people have asked you that in the past.
Yeah, altogether, I would say close to about 5,000 decks.
I thought you were going to say like 500. I could add another zero on there. Holy moly. I've got the right guy here then, okay? All righty then.
It's a sickness.
At some point. That's probably what your wife and family says.
Yeah, right.
So do you have a room dedicated just to this?
Yeah, mostly just down here in my basement. That's where most of the cards are displayed. I still have probably 1,000 still boxed away in storage and things like that. So, but most of it is down here in the basement. I might have a couple hundred upstairs in the office and things like that.
Do you think a deck of cards is worth more if it has not been opened, or less?
I think it's definitely worth a lot more.
Okay.
Yeah, I think as soon as you crack that seal, it goes down tremendously, especially if the deck of cards is used.
I was going to say, if you take it out and you shuffle them or something, and even one time, it's a used deck then at that point, of course.
Sure.
But some of these cards have beautiful designs on the court cards or the jokers or something like that. And I have seen some cards displayed like that. So in that case, do you buy like two decks, one you will leave sealed and then another one you'll take out and display?
Exactly. Yeah, I always buy two decks of each, one to keep sealed. Uh-huh. And hopefully it'll, you know, I'll be able to sell it for more later on.
That's what your wife's
and
hoping.
And always, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, but the other deck I crack open and play with and check out the faces and stuff like that. There are some decks like Tally Ho's or Jerry's Nuggets where I'll buy a brick at a time. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, you know, two or three decks each.
And when you do take those out, have you got them displayed in a certain place or do you put them in behind glass somewhere, like a framed poster type of thing?
Sure, yeah. Like back here, I got them maybe 1,000 of them lined up along the wall back here.
Right.
I have a literal card table over there by my in front of the TV where the decks are nice and displayed inside it, like a coffee table kind of a thing where mm-hmm. you can see through the glass. Got another table over here where there are a couple hundred just lined up and displayed that way.
And have you ever, when you do take them out, do you ever use them or is it just for display purposes only?
Most of the time it's just for display purposes only. The only time I ever perform is with a red circle back Tally Ho deck. That's really what you only see me perform with. I just like, you know, I like the feel. I like the finish. They farrow nicely. They last longer than bicycle cards do. They got a cool design. But, you know, thanks. One of the latest decks I got here are the Avengers.
That is a new deck. Yeah, I just saw those
by Theory 11. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just got those. Those are pretty cool. I cracked this deck open just to see what who was on the characters that were on the faces and things like that. But I'll never perform with it.
Well, I haven't opened up my 007 deck either. I have seen pictures of what the cards look like, but they don't have pictures like of Sean Connery or and Daniel Craig and others on there. They just does the Avengers deck have pictures of some of the superheroes on there?
Yeah, pretty much all the superheroes: Spider-Man, Thor, Iron Man. They're all in the faces.
Wow. Now, whenever again, that's something that just kind of attracted your attention. It wasn't because I know Theory 11 comes out with these decks all the time then, too.
Oh, yeah.
And as we have Magic conventions also, I'm assuming they must have some collectors, playing card collector conventions, because there's some people, I'm confident, who are not magicians at all, but for whatever reason started collecting playing cards. So is there a community that you are associated with, or do they have events like that?
Yes, that's something I just realized recently within the last couple of years. There is a community called 52plusjoker.org, and that's ran by Lee Asher, actually. Hmm. And it's people from all over the country, all over the world. They just collect decks of cards. And they're not just magicians. They're not just flourishers, cardists. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't do magic or cardistry. They just like to collect them.
They just like the artwork, perhaps, of the cards and everything then, too.
Sure.
So in relation, your collection, in relation to those of others who have been collecting for years and older than you, are you considered still a piker in their world?
I would think so, yeah.
So there's some, I assume, who have tens of thousands of decks of cards.
Not that I know of. I mean, I have heard of a couple other people that might have about 5,000 decks or something like that, but I haven't heard of anybody who has more than that. I mean, people who haven't actually like created and produced their own decks of cards to
right.
sell and all
right.
that stuff.
So that's yeah. not anything that has attracted you to go out and try to make your own deck of cards, has it? Or do you have your own deck?
I don't have my own deck yet. Maybe sometime in the near future.
Yet. Okay, yet is the key word there in that sentence.
Right.
Sounds like there is something in the back of your mind.
There is, yeah. Maybe, possibly, yes. Near future.
So an obvious question that others probably have asked whenever they come down and their eyes are just wide like saucers and they say, holy cow, has to be, what is your favorite deck of cards?
Sure, yeah, that's a good question. I do have some original Jerry's Nugget decks. I don't have very many old decks of cards, like from the early 1900s or late 1800s or anything like that. Probably, you know, the original Jerry's Nuggets around 1970. Mm-hmm. Those are probably my favorite.
I have a deck of those I was given as a gift many, many years ago, and I have not opened it, and I think it's an original deck. I don't know. How do you determine, without opening a deck, if it is an original versus, you know, something that's new, that's a reproduction?
Yeah, well, one thing about the Jerry's Nugget decks that I learned from Lee Asher is if you take an X-Acto knife and slice open the side panel of the box,
yeah,
it will have the date printed on the inside of the flap.
Well, now that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the same on all or just on the nuggets?
Yeah, not just on the nuggets.
Well, wouldn't that decrease the value by doing that?
It sure would.
I mean, that's kind of like carbon dating something. You got to break it to find out how old it is.
Right.
Well, now we know. Oh, it was original. Well, it's not worth as much now. So.
Worth nothing now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is interesting. I know they do produce Jerry's Nuggets now. And a brick of those, how much is a brick typically cost? And a brick, for those people who are listening to this and just for informational purposes, maybe not planning on getting into collecting, most will know, what, there are a dozen decks in a brick, right?
Right.
And the quality does vary quite a bit from card to card, I'm certain. When you're talking about, for an example, the Tally-Hos that you have, how good they are versus bicycle has gone down in quality over the years, I've got to admit. I mean, the quality control, even on the registration of the colors and everything, plus the feel and the way they shuffle and everything. I know that Richard Turner had worked with them for a long time, but then he stopped and seems like they went back to their old way or whatever. But I think the Tally-Ho probably is the better.
Yeah, the Tally-Hos have changed slightly over time too, but they are still pretty good. They fare well, and uh-huh. I don't know if you know about the Elmsley trick, where you take a nail file and go across the corner of each corner of the deck and file off the edge there. That'll help them fare a lot easier, a lot better that way.
That is a good idea. You would have to do that over the whole deck. You don't, I mean, while you're holding it, you're not doing it by each card or whatever. So this way it has the same. Yeah. Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
And so just on the edge, on the corners.
That's it. Yeah. All four corners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going back again to the Jerry's Nuggets, how much are those cards, original decks, going for now?
Original Jerry's, I would say in the neighborhood of $250 up.
Okay.
For each deck.
I thought I had heard $350, an estimate at one point. That's not unreasonable, right? That sound
right. That's normal. Yeah.
Is it okay? Wow. Is that one of the most expensive decks that's available out there to collectors currently?
It's one of them. I mean, I've seen decks sell for thousands of dollars.
Why?
Like old, rare, like from from like the 1700s, 1800s. Mm-hmm. Like only like maybe 10 exist in the world or something like that.
Well, that
those
makes
sell for thousands.
That makes sense. Speaking of which, have you been to the Nashville's House of Cards?
I haven't been there yet. No,
I'm surprised because it was built on cards, basically, because from what I understand, the owner bought a collection of playing cards and there were some very, very rare cards there that hold some high value, and they've been framed and put on these posts that are in the restaurant. So you can see these frame cards, and has little plates and tells you something about that. So there are a lot of cards on the walls and around there that are apparently from an expensive deck from way back when, some of the early cards.
Nice. Hmm.
Yeah, you need to go check that out. So as we start to wrap up over here, what would you say is, I'm curious, when did playing cards start? I kind of like to tell stories when I'm performing with cards and telling them a little bit about the history of that. I just kind of have made that up, but I know they were original pieces of art, and the king and the queen would have these made for them, and they were very expensive, and their son, the prince, was the jack, and all the rest of that. I know the Devil's Prayer Book, or what is that also called, the Soldier's Prayer Book of what the cards are and everything. But how far back do they go? When do playing cards originate?
Yeah, I don't know exactly details on the exact history of that, but I would guess maybe back to the 1200s or 1400s. I'm pretty sure they're French in origin.
Okay. And yeah. Have you seen some of those older cards, like in other people's
collections? No, I sure haven't.
Okay.
No.
Again, I didn't know, like, through that organization you were talking about of Lee Asher's, of whether they had gotten together and you've kind of shown cards or, you know, that kind of a thing. And but
yeah, you know, for some reason, I just joined his club about 2 years ago. So I'm like, actually looking forward to his next convention. It's going to be in Niagara Falls, New York, coming up.
So your real passion is collecting, not so much on the history of the cards.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Right. So it looks like as young as you are, you're going to have another 5,000 before long.
that would be nice.
As they continue.
You know, actually, a good friend of mine not too long ago, I think he quoted, it may have been Fitzky. And Fitzky was talking about books, and he said, you don't need a lot of books. You just need the right books. Right. Mm. So I'm starting to think that way about decks of cards now. You don't need a lot of decks. You just need the right ones. So maybe in the near future, I might start unloading some of these. I don't know.
So the right ones to you are the ones that mean something to you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like the Tally Ho's, the Jerry's Nuggets, the Bruce Lee decks, you know, things like that. Yeah.
Things that mean something to you as opposed to just having them. Yeah. Because I'm sure for a while you probably were buying just about everything you could get your hands on.
Just about. That's right.
Yeah. So any last words as for collectors who might be interested in this kind of a thing? Because I many years ago started collecting business cards just because they were free. So it was a very cheap way of getting into collecting. And before long, well, not many people use business cards. Now they are getting to be collector's items for real. But I have hundreds and hundreds of business cards. And I know Al the only collected business cards also. And whenever I was talking with people who were wanting to get involved in collecting, I would say that's an easy and cheap way of getting into it. Playing cards, I think, would be about the next cheapest thing they can get into collecting. But any suggestions as to for people to begin collecting and what they should do to get started?
Yeah, I would say, you know, just collect as many or as much as you can. You know, go to the Theory 11s, the Penguins, the Expert Playing Card Company with Bill Kalush. There's a company called KingsWildProject.com. He makes some fantastic playing cards. PlayingCardDecks.com. You can get them all there.
Wow. Okay. Well, good suggestions. I know a lot of these things are available then online. And but if you get a chance still to hold them in your hand, well, you really don't get to hold them in your hand because, again, you don't take them out and play with them. You just kind of look at the pack and say, I think I'll take one of those. Yeah, that's that's great. Well, Sean, thanks very much. As far as the last word, what's your magic word?
Yes. Thanks for asking. I would actually have to say, in the words of Bruce Lee, be water, my friend.
Be water. Ooh, I like that a lot. Yeah, bend like with the willow tree. So that way you're going to be water. Very good.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you very much. So from the mouth of a true aficionado, a playing card collector, Mr. Sean Rivera, thank you very much for being my guest over here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. So for the magic word, that was Sean Rivera. This is Scotty out. Well, I want to thank my guests, both Jack Brutus Penny and also to Mr. Sean Rivera. Thank you guys very much for being my guests this week and for giving us a little bit of an education about not only how to develop playing cards and to get them taken to market, and also those who are on the other end of us, those of us who purchase those retail decks of cards, and to learn more about why we do have such a fascination with decks of cards. I appreciate you guys sharing your ideas with me and also with all of the listeners. And just as a reminder, the Kickstarter campaign that Jack has going on will run through the month of May of 2021. So if you are interested in helping in that effort, you can. I will say, although he has already exceeded his goals as this broadcast is going out, but you can still help him and get some of the stretch goals and some of the other cool perks he has there, again, by just going to kickstarter.com/project/
Jack Brutus Penny /Sensu, or makes it easier if you just go to Kickstarter.com and just do a search for Sensu. That's S-E-N-S-U. Again, I'm not trying to support one person's commercial venture any more than I do anyone else, because there are a lot of great magicians who've got a lot of great products and everything that are coming out all the time, and a lot of good projects as well as products. And so this is just something that really fascinated me, and I thought might perhaps fascinate you as much as it did me. So I hope you enjoyed this and are educated as much as I have been. Well, I hope you come back again next week and enjoy another great episode. And if you like this one, you will really enjoy the video we recorded that's on YouTube. If you'll go to youtube.com/Texas Magician, you should be able to find this week's episode number 611 about playing cards. It's called In the Cards. And also, if you will go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there, of course, you can subscribe to our pod letter, and you can keep up to date with each person who's going to be on from week to week, and also some suggestions from the archive. You can go back and hear for the first time, or to listen again and to perhaps pick up something you might have missed the first time around. So please check that out. And again, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and keep your life in balance. And the way to do that is to be like water. This is Scotty out.